All I really want to say is they don't really care about us. I won't go on because, of course, that was the late, great Michael Jackson, and I wouldn't dare try to pitch a tune next to his, but it's the content that I will talk about momentarily. Welcome to another edition of Progressive News Weekly. My name is Darrell Clark, and I want to thank you for taking the time out to tune in, to participate in a progressive forum where we don't just talk the talk, but we walk the talk, because we walk away from this dialogue with deliverables, with action items in which we wish to make a difference through. It's news for you, by you, and of you. And so with that, I'd like to thank those of you who do call or write and encourage us to continue with our movement, our crusade, our efforts to make a difference through real information. Information that's not adulterated, not influenced by political or business interest. I thank you for making the suggestions for the topics and or our guests, and I ask you continue to do that. Drop me an email at Darryl, D-A-R-R-Y-L, underscore, C-L-A-1-8, at MSN.com, and we'll be sure to take into consideration your thoughts and suggestions. Today we have a very, very pertinent topic that I'm sure is on millions of minds and all of the listeners who have tuned in, whether in the archives or live today. And to help facilitate that discussion, we have a very special guest, someone who's near to me and dear to me. We have Dr. Akhil Kulfani. For those of you who are new, well, hold on to your seats, because he's very much in line with where we at Progressive News Weekly are, keeping it real, keeping it live, facing issues head on without fear, shame, or guilt. Dr. Kulfani is the director of the Africana Institute of Essex County. He's a professor, sociologist, author, actor. I can go on and on. You get the idea. He's a mover and a shaker, and a critical thinker and remarkable mind. And today, we're going to get into some of the hard-hitting issues that are facing us today, of that horrific, heinous murder that took place in South Carolina. These issues are more prevalent than ever before. I understand in Alabama there's been some movement in terms of the flag. We're talking about the Confederate flag. Yes, it was taken down in Alabama. We'll talk a little bit about that. That's an action. But what we really want to talk about is addressing head-on these racist overt acts, continuing and escalating. They're all linked, every one of them, going back beyond Ferguson. And so I'm looking so forward to this dialogue today, especially in light of my brother, who is so action-oriented. He doesn't like to just talk about these issues. This is not a forum where we just want to surround and say, well, it's a shame, and I think this is the way it went down. No, we talk about this is what we need to do as a society, as human beings, but especially as African Americans. So Kulfani his first book, The Hidden Debate, The Truth Revealed About the Battle Over Affirmative Action in South Africa and the United States, was nominated for two national awards. the Oliver Cromwell Cox Award, and the American Sociological Association's Distinguished Book Award. This is the real deal. So if you're tuning in, make sure you tell someone to catch the archives so that they can come back. And Dr. Cavani is committed to a concerted effort that we're going to be bringing forward this summer with other remarkable minds to make a difference. Today, I use the bumper tune, "They Don't Really Care About Us," well, for a couple of reasons. One, it's apropos. If you just look at the recent history, the last 2 years of what's been happening, all under a black African-American president, by no coincidence, by my perspective. But also, we all know Michael was way ahead of his time. If you Google the lyrics, skinhead, deadhead, everybody gone bad, situation, aggravation, everybody, allegation. In the suite, on the news, everybody, dog food. That's what we're being treated like. Bang, bang, shot dead. Everybody's gone mad. All I want to say is that they don't really care about us. Beat me, hate me. You can never break me. We will thrill me. You can never kill me. And this is where Mike got in a little bit of trouble on this one. Jew me, sue me. Everybody do me. Kick me, kike me. Don't you black or white me. So let's not get it twisted. I'll leave you to go and get the rest of the lyrics, but the brother was on the point. I'll just give you a little tidbit. Tell me what has become of my life. I have a wife and two children who love me. I'm the victim of police brutality. Way ahead of his time. So I hope I got Brother Akil warmed up, because I know how he brings it even without getting him warmed up. So with that said, I introduce to you Professor Humanitarian, true change agent, Dr. Akil Kofani. Welcome to another edition of Progressive News Weekly, Dr. Kofani.
Hey, brother. Thank you very much. I'm glad to be on once again. And you pointed out correctly. This is almost a heart-wrenching, I'll explain almost a little later on, but heart-wrenching point, the reason I'm on today. And I thank you for the honor of allowing me to come and bring some clarity to where we are and where we need to head.
Well, the idea here is, because of the way that you do bring it clear and straightforward, is to get as many hundreds and thousands and tens of thousands to get on board. That's the goal. That's where we are here. So we never leave the airwaves without encouraging the listeners to have some deliverable. And so I put the deliverable out front in this program today. And that is to take this message that you're about to get, just like a disciple, take it out. If you don't tell but one other person, do not be a secret agent. I enjoyed the James Bond series. That's the only secret agent that we need in this crisis. Don't you be a secret agent, listener. Share this message. If it's just with a relative or a backyard neighbor or down the hall neighbor, across the porch neighbor, or in the supermarket associate or bank or post office, don't let this lie dormant. Because this is energy that we're getting ready to bring forth today. We're going to cover a serious gamut, and we're not going to stop today. In these next 45 minutes, it's just going to be the root of where we're going to head with this conversation. And as I said, in the weeks ahead, we've got some folks lined up that Dr. Kofani is going to align with to continue the message. Because too often what happens days, weeks after a salient event, is all the energy dies. But I will not stop. And we have commitments from major critical thinkers who will not let the energy die as well. We will not stop until justice is done for us. Dr. Kilfani, as you said, this is a sort of a heart-wrenching time, because it was just a couple of weeks ago when I was on the air and my wife happened to join. She was so passionate. It's rare she comes in studio. But when that little girl in Texas had that man, 14, and that man's back, knee in her back, on national, international television, we said, okay, enough is enough. They're attacking our little girls, innocent, no weapons, in a bathing suit. It's the biggest slap in the face that we thought we could have endured. And did they top it? They. Now, you notice I'm saying they, because this is about energy. Because that young man, he was not acting alone. Don't be fooled. And you got a lot of folks out here. And I'm glad to see the energy of the movement. I've always said we don't want to discount our Asian or Caucasian or Latino brothers and sisters who want to get into that movement, but we've got to head the energy in the movement. So I'm happy to see folks pulling down flags and standing up with their posters and signs who are non-African American. I'm glad to see that movement, and we want to see that increase. So all my white and Asian and Latino brothers and sisters who listen in every week and are proud to have a forum such that you do tune in, because you know we just tell the truth, I thank you and I encourage you to continue. There are so many out there who want to just use that as a means of putting a lid on this. And that's where we're going to move forward from. So I want to just start by giving Dr. Akhil Kilfani the mic and letting him, first of all, give us his perspective as a backdrop, what this scenario, this most recent scenario, and he's been through so, I mean, Dr. Kilfani has been through so many of these with us over the last couple of years. I mean, if it wasn't New York, it wasn't my hometown, Cleveland, with that boy. It wasn't Baltimore, breaking a man's back. And Kilfani's been through this with us, folks. So I'm going to ask him to give us his perspective before we get into some specific dialogue about what we need to do about this most recent heinous act. Dr. Kilfani, you got the mic. Give us your take on this recent incident.
Yes, sir. Well, first and foremost, I want us to say that we got to stop calling this guy a young man. We speak too polite about these events and about the people who are the causers of the harm to our community. He was a terrorist in our midst. Let's call him for what he was and what he is. This terrorist in our midst was preying upon folks. He wasn't praying at the church like other folks was, but he was preying on them. And it was a setup, you see, and we keep treating it like we call him polite, we think polite, we act kind, but no, there was nothing kind about it. There was nothing kind about how he came to it and why he came to it the way he came to it, because he had a plan and he wasn't alone. And we need to find out who are his co-conspirators, you see, because when you look at the most recent news that's out, not the stuff that's on regular TV, but I would say go look on stuff that's online, because you have other folks who have been co-signing on to what he did and celebrating his work. Two or three of them got fired because of that foolishness. But it lets you know that the sentiment is not an isolated sentiment. He suggested to us that he was going to step out because other folks – I'm just going to put it the way the sentiment that he came with it. He suggested to it that the other people were basically weak, that they were punks. He said that the Ku Klux Klan and the skinheads were weak, getting weak, in essence. And he said that they just talk a lot and they're not doing anything. So he's stepping it up. But he ain't come to that conclusion by himself. Who else is making the same observation? Who else is making the same analysis? We have to stop being naive about stuff like this. See, if we got to go back and read Things Fell Apart, look at Okonkwo, right? And look at how the folks came into Nigeria and the things came apart, things fell apart, and how that what that storyline was about, because that's the storyline in our midst. You see, people use our acceptingness, our willingness to welcome them in, and not that we shouldn't, but that we have to do so in a way that's cautious. And, you know, I put something out there I'm a sociologist, right? And I put something out there to the sociologist group and the Association of Black Sociologists, and they had a statement. They did a press release on the thing. But I put something out to our news group, and, you know, one of the immediate responses is that, well, you know, we have to be careful because, you know, we have to be concerned about our you know, have conversations that are not in public and blah, blah, blah. And because people are afraid of the Patriot Act and people watching them. And I understand that. Junior scholars who might have the potential of losing their jobs. And I understand that. But Malcolm X and Martin Luther King had much more to lose and knew was at the precipice of them losing of their life. See, at some point we have to get to the place where we're willing to step back up to the plate and be willing to have something that we're both willing to live for, but also something that we're willing to die for. And I'm not saying that I want to die, but I'm saying that we have to get to the place where we have the courage to push the envelope and to call a spade when it's that. We keep saying, calling things politely, like you know, and that's why they put the bulletproof vest on him. That's why if you listen to what the judge said that we have this you know, these nine people who lost their lives, and, you know, we're concerned about that. But we have to also be concerned about the family of this young man. Really? Did he really go there? Of course he did, because he was telling you from where he was coming. He was telling you the story about what he was representing and how he thought, really, we need to be thinking about this. Not about the nine families. Not that this person was a sitting senator who was assassinated. Where's the national outcry for a sitting a senator, for a politician? Does that not equate to the level of a national mourning when the other folks who are in the Senate or the House, if something ever happens to them, whether it's on the state level or person in assembly or it's on the federal level, that there's a national outcrying, that there's a national push from those other elected officials to make sure that this is known to be unacceptable. But that hasn't been the same sentiment. I haven't heard that on that level, now that you had an African-American who was assassinated by self-proclaimed white supremacists. If this person had been a Muslim and the people in the church had been European, there would be an APB out on anybody who was Muslim. Or if the person was African-American or Latino or Asian, there would be an APB out looking for people like that who are potential co-conspirators. There's no national outcry for an APB out on people who look like, do like, think like this person. They're protecting him, not those families. The only person that I heard who was decided to do something was that a sheriff in, I think, in Phoenix. He said to all these churches in Phoenix that he was going to have sheriffs there last weekend. And some of the churches didn't want it, but he said he's doing it anyway. I thought that was interesting. It was European sheriff. But I don't hear that outcry anywhere else. I don't hear the urgency for that in other places where we know that there's white supremacists in America? Why are the lives of African people, nine people, plus a sitting senator, not of value, not seen and heard the same way? So we have to do and think differently. It's a new day. It's a new day, but it's an old day. That's where the problem really is. And that's why I said what I said earlier. And that was that I said we have to now take this as a time that we mourn, and that this is a place where we really have to, you know, look at it a way that we want to pay tribute to those families. We do, but this is not the first time. It's reoccurring. And we have to look at where are the other incidences. What are the churches that are being attacked? And if you listen to what his manifesto, he said he chose that because of its significance. That was no accident. We want to call him a young man. Please give me a break. Come on now. We got to wake up, people. And I don't care if you're African or European or Latino or Asian or whatever other persuasion you might be, Christian, Jew, Muslim, traditional African spiritualist, Buddhist. We have to be clear that this was a planned, organized endeavor that was successfully carried out. And he let you know it was no accident, not only by the manifesto, because he didn't kill somebody and said that he wanted that person to tell everybody else what happened. So this was just a wake-up call. That's all he said. That's what he set up. He said, hello, look out, America. This is what's coming. And this is the first one. And we got more to come. Wake up, people. We got to think and do differently. They told us what to do in the 60s. And Kwame Ture made it clear. He said, nothing means anything without organization. So it's not about me by myself going out and making a rally cry, because someone could assassinate me or kidnap me or do whatever. And so I would be gone. It's not about me, Akil Kokayi Kalfani. It's about the collective of folks who are willing and committed to, because it takes a commitment, committed to organizing on a local and a national level and an international level to confront this type of ongoing atrocity before it happens again on a larger scale. Because think about it. What if that had been one of the big churches, right, where there's hundreds of people there on a Sunday? Or what if he was at a baseball game or a school's event? We have to think differently about this. There's terrorists in our midst.
100%. Let me ask you a question. Just intervene for just a moment. This is great.
Yes, sir.
Great momentum that you're bringing. What's your thought about how the family members have been exuding the forgiveness approach? And all the family who spoke to, as you say, and I stand corrected, to that terrorist, ain't about what I labeled him as. I won't even let that fall off my lips again. But when they all had a chance to address him in the courtroom, to a number, every one of them were, highly forgiven in their expression. What is your thoughts about the way that they presented themselves?
I think, unfortunately, that spirit to do so is beyond my comprehension, first of all, let me say that. And second of all, that spirit comes from that African idea about balance, right? Ma'at, true justice, righteousness, harmonious balance, and reciprocity. But I think sometimes we're too quick to be forgiving of something that has not. That's the way people are dealing with pain, right, and suffering. We've gone through so much pain and suffering as African people in America, as African people on the continent, as African people in the island, islands, all the places that we are, the length of atrocities that we've been through. Think about South Africa. Think about the Belgian Congo. Think about Brazil and Haiti and Jamaica and all these places where the South, the North, all over the place in the United States where African people are, and the level of atrocities. We're in pain. We're hurting. We're hurting generationally. We're hurting ancestrally. We still need to uplift the negative spirit of our ancestors who've been in pain and suffering for hundreds of years at this point because of the level of indignities and atrocities. So we respond that way because of that pain. But I would argue that doesn't get us what we think that it gets us. That is, that not that we want to live with the negative energy that he put forward, but that we have to not be so naive to think that to respond in such a way immediately alleviates anything, changes anything for that direction. We have to respond with the same vigor of a Malcolm X. I just heard a speech the other day that I'd never heard before by Martin Luther King Jr., and it was talking about that we as his speech on being a person of African descent, and he said that we have to know that people want anything that if you look in the dictionary, he said, you see everything that's related to the idea of blackness is negative. If you look in the dictionary, everything that's related to the idea of whiteness is positive. And so that we have to transform that, and we have to know our history. We have to know our place in the world in which we live. And until we do that, then we can't fully be educated on the level of knowing how to overcome those things. And I think we got to go to John Henrik Clark. We got to go to Dr. Ben. We go to their writings, their legacy. We begin to know how to heal. Got to look at Maremba Ani. Got to look at the works of Queen Afua. Got to look at the works of all these folks who are working on healing our spirit, healing our bodies, healing our minds collectively. And then our response to that become different. Because I was in Los Angeles in 92, and Rodney King did the same thing, right? His famous quote, or infamous really, was, "Can't we all just get along?" in an effort to stop the violence that was going on in Los Angeles. Now, I mean, I was there. I was putting out fires. So I understand the desire to put out the fires and the calm, the energy and the spirit. But I also understand that we have got to do something different from what we've been doing. And that is that we can say that we're unaccepting of his apology, and if he were to apologize, we could say we don't have to live with the negativity that he pushed out, but we have to get to the place where we are not creating a space that says that particular act is something that we expose ourselves to again. Because if we continue to think the way we've been thinking and doing what we've been doing, then we open ourselves to being continually victimized. We open ourselves to continually being assaulted and affronted. And I think that day needs to come to an end. We need to be able to defend our households, our families. We need to know how to someone needs to be on the watch. You know, if you have church, then who's the person who's on watch? That's if you look at the Nation of Islam. When they have their service, somebody's on security. Well, when we have events, who's on security? When we have church service, who's on security? Who's watching out? We have to be on the watch because there are terrorists in our midst. And so, therefore, we have to be observant. And this is what I tell my children. You have to be observant of your surroundings. And when things don't look and feel right, and be in tune with that African spirit that's in your gut and your belly, and when something doesn't feel right, be on the mind, be mindful of that feeling so that you know that some
force within you is telling you to open your eyes, open your mind to be observant to something that's out of tune. And that's what that's so if we are overly apologetic of that, then we've gotten our own selves off our own kilter, right? That's what happened with President Obama. President Obama was going to this church, you know, with this fiery priest, pastor. And so that was his center. That was his center for him and his family. And people came out against him and came out against the pastor and then Obama going to that church. And what did they do? He allowed them to steal his spiritual center. That was his spiritual renewal. And so, therefore, by distancing yourself from something that centered you, then what do you have? Then you go someplace that's less centering. And so you don't have that strong force. You don't have that same, thing that's holding your back up when your back is against the wall spiritually and mentally, right? Because that's the thing. You need that energy, that force that's coming to uplift you. And so I would encourage those families. I understand the desire to absolve him, but he's unabsolvable because his acts were not acting alone. And so, therefore, if you absolve him, that exposes you mentally, psychologically to the co-conspirators who are out there. And his co-conspirators, you know, we have to think about this differently, right? Because his co-conspirators may not be co-conspirators in the traditional way of thinking about this. So somebody, me saying that someone thinks maybe that I think that somebody would sat down with him and planned. No. It's like the same way that they think that you know when you have the so-called Muslim terrorists who are supposed to be supposedly these separate cells. The same is true with the white supremacist groups. They act independently, and so that his cue may be some cue to somebody else that this is the time, and so therefore we have to be on the watch because. Otherwise, we expose ourselves to being victims, and I'm not one to be exposed as victim. I'm going to be on the watch and prepared and preparing for anything to happen, and that's how we have to be prepared. But we also have to have our finances in order. We got to have our spaces in order. We got to have this is an interesting show you might want to do one day. If you have the average person and you ask them what would they do if there was no water and no food at the grocery store, how would they survive for a week? How would they survive for a month? We don't have that level of preparation. You know, so those are some things I think that we need to begin to start thinking differently about the realities of the times that we're in, because it's not an isolated, it's not an accident that it happened, and it's not an isolated situation. And so those families, I would say, keep your eyes open. That's what I would say.
Wow. Tell me, you spoke a lot about our history. I mean, you were dropping some heavies, John Henry Clark. I even heard of Queen of Four. That speaks to that educational piece. What role do you think, and I'm segueing into some of the solution aspect of this dialogue we're going to be having going forward. What role does that that knowledge of our history play ever more than before? And Dr. Kofani, you have been talking about this for years since I've known you going back many years, and even when you first came on Progressive News Weekly years ago, I know it's a hot button, but looking at where we've come, because as you said, this is no coincidence. This was planned. It's part of a regression towards African Americans, and it's not looking to stop anytime soon without some intervention or interference. And so, where will us knowing our history as African Americans and as a culture overall in society play a role in addressing this situation?
I think it plays you know, it's, at least as African people, I think it plays a central role. That's why, I mean, maybe even the central role, because as I said, when you look back at things fall apart, that shows the downfall of a Nigerian society at the hands of colonial process, right? So that first came in the spiritualist, the Catholic Church, then came in the mercenaries and the military, and so then this process is one where we have to look at that because it's been repeated time and time again. Our experiences have to be based on that level of knowledge, that level of world knowledge. If you go back and you look at the history of how I watched a documentary a couple months ago on the Aboriginal people in Australia, because it's not just an African history, it's a history and an understanding of white supremacy. It's a history and understanding of racism. And so that those things have specific agendi, and that those agenda are the things that are we need to be cognizant of, because they're not they've been unrelenting, and they know how to adapt well to situations, so that their adaptability is one of the things that we need to understand. You know, what, why, and how do they adapt? What, why, and how should be our responses to those adaptations? And not just responses to, because you want to move to the other part of the discussion, what are our offensive as well as defensive strategies? See, we don't want to just be victims and victimized. We want to have a strategy and a process of sustainability. So we also need to study the histories of the successes of our people, the places and times when our people were successful in creating great societies, in having great and high culture. All those things are important for us to study. You know, I just saw this week there's a new discovery of a society in southern Africa. They had these huge like towns, and they're thought that right now there's going to be more work done on them. But the thought is that they're between 150 and 200,000 years old. So that this may even predate, these city structures may even predate ancient Kemet that we know of. And so that Africans have been developing high societies, high culture. Great Zimbabwe is another one, right? For thousands and thousands of years. And so we need to go back and dig into those things that we as Africans have been doing and begin to see the successes and not only the failures or the places where white supremacy and other modes of onslaughts have oppressed us. You know, we have to know about both the Arab or the Muslim and the Arab and the European slave trades, right? Both of them negatively and substantively impacted African people. The Arab slave trade for hundreds of years and over millions and millions of Africans. It more females than males. It predated and went on longer than the European slave trade. European slave trade took both men and women and children and went on for hundreds of years and took over 100 to 150 million Africans. So that was part of the depopulation of the African continent, these terrorists in our midst, right? And so even though we have to stop, you know, people, we want to call things politely, and I think that's another part of the previous question you asked me about how the families responded. That is the reason why we continue to be assaulted and affronted, is that the African spirit is one that's open and welcoming, and that we have to learn how to do that, but within a space that allows for us to be protective of ourselves and our families and our communities, right? Or maybe I should say that in the reverse, the community of the family and the individual, right? Because the part of that, part of our understanding is the part of the way we look at things is not even in an African way. We you know, when I got married to my wife, I told her, I said, for me, community is first. And her idea was that family was first. I said, I understand that, but that's really a Western way of thinking, because the community exists within the family. If the community is not strong, then our family can't be strong, even in the face of everything else, because our family has the support of, or the lack thereof, of a strong community. So that community has to be the strong thing first, and that we have to give everything, and if our family building and efforts and our self-building and efforts are for the community, then the community is going to be strong. Then our families are going to be strong. Then you as an individual is going to be strong, because everybody else in that community is working towards your good first before they're working towards ours. That goes back to the African concept of Ubuntu, right? Even the way we think about it, we say, we are, therefore I am, therefore we are. That is the African way, but we've gotten away from that. We need to return to that. There's another African proverb that says, moto ke moto kabato, and it means that your humanity is attested to and strengthened by how humanely you treat your neighbors. So we knew as Africans that the people who came in as Europeans, as colonists terrorists and warmongers and, you know, engaged in thievery. People don't even like to hear these words, but this is what it was. You know, the pirates that we think of, and we go to Disneyland and we see the Pirates of the Caribbean and we laugh about it. Those were people who were terrorizing and tormenting African people. And what do you think they were stealing from each other? Stuff that they stole from the continent. People who were stolen. They were robbing slave ships from one slave ship to another. And so that these are the things that they were thinking about, and we make jokes about it. But no, this wasn't a joking situation. These so-called pirates that they were talking about, these people were horrific. But we make cartoons about it and think that, oh, we dress up at Halloween as a pirate. When they say they were stealing booty, they were stealing everything in sight that they could find of value, most of which we can find in museums today around the world. How do you think the things in the museums got there? They didn't ask permission for them. They stole them. They didn't buy them. They didn't buy mummified remains. Think about that. They have mummified, real living mummified remains of Africans in museums across the world. Now, if you had the mummified remains of George Washington or King Ferdinand from Spain or any of these other places, and you put it in a museum in Africa or in Jamaica or in Haiti, they would go to war over that because it's sacrilegious, right? But we haven't taken it to that level, and we need to think about it and begin to start approaching things in that level. We have to hold ourselves, see ourselves as sacred beings, and treat ourselves and our history and our culture as sacred, and then we will value it. We have to be sure to teach it to our children so then that they value it. That's how we're going to change it. That's really the revolution that Martin Luther King Jr. said. You know, he said we have to have a revolution of ideas. They don't play that speech too much.
Wow. That's a whole different concept of thinking when what you're speaking of now. I want to open up the lines. The number is 347-838-9142. Again, if you'd like to comment or have a question of Dr. Akil Kafani with regard to the state of African Americans, then you'll dial 347-838-9142, and then you'll press 1, and our engineer will pick up and bridge you into the conversation. I see we have one person and two folks that want to comment right now. Oh, we're going to go to that. I had a question myself, but I will pass that time on. So we have coming out of a 972 area. The number is familiar. I believe it's one of our regular listeners. We have a 972 ending in 4042. You're live. Who are we talking with?
Good brother Darrell, this is Kevin Porter. How are you doing?
Oh my gosh, I thought that number was familiar. Brother Kevin Porter was our guest just recently, as we had the discussion about the young lady truly a lady in Texas, the little girl. And you are a guest. You, of course, have written books and are working on mentorship. You're going to be part of our dialogue going forward that I mentioned earlier in the program in trying to move forward with a strategy. So, Dr. Porter, what do you have to say a question about what Dr. Kofani has to say?
Well, I want to, first of all, applaud Dr. Kofani for his vision, his message, and one thing that struck a chord to me was the revolution. And I think Dr. Kofani will also agree that the revolution has to start with a group of people who put a plan together and make sure that plan is carried through throughout the major cities in America. Because quite often we have great ideas amongst each other, but we don't execute those plans. We understand that the children and the education and the curriculum are very impactful. We understand few of us understand the history and how that impacts us. However, to be able to carry that message, that revolution, and revolution is a word that may scare others, but it's something that our times require. Our time on this earth is going to be very short. So that revolution has to happen now. We're not talking 2016. We're talking 2015. We are seeing the various messages of the homicides of our communities being destroyed, of the fear, the lack of understanding, the racism, the police brutality. We see it, but we also need to realize that we shouldn't walk in fear, but we should walk in intelligence and carry out this plan. And the plan has to start with, we need some intelligent people to help change the curriculum. We also need some people to get into the school and not just say we're going to change the curriculum, but we're going to invest some time with the youth in these schools so that we can elevate their education. Not only do we need to plant history in their mind, but we need to make sure that they're academically prepared for this when they are leading us. And then we need to be creative enough to challenge our kids to be on the forefront of technology, on the forefront of the legal system, on the forefront of developing our communities. And if we don't show them, they won't be able to do it. So I applaud you for bringing it out, but I'm ready to get a group of men and women to carry that plan out. And I want to turn it over to my brother Durrell, because I know you're doing great things, and I want to just allow the guest speaker to continue his flow. But I want to applaud you, brother, for just being courageous and willing to prepare us for that revolution. Let's join together and make sure it happens.
Wow. All right, Dr. Porter, we so appreciate those comments. Do you have anything you want to say in response, Dr. Kofani?
I just think that that the idea about a plan is key. You know, we have to plan and then plan and then plan again. You know, that becomes the success of any plan is in the details. And the other part that we have is that we need to do relationship building, right? So we come together and we do a lot of meetings, but we still don't have trust amongst each other. And that's because we have
meetings, but we don't have things to take that meeting to the next place. So when you see a lot of Europeans, they get together and they do stuff like go play golf or do other social things. Well, we have to have the social that marries with that so that we know each other's families and we build that sense of community. Back in the village, everybody lived in the village, so it was easier to do. Today we have to develop new ideas, new methodologies to get to that point. And I developed a proverb the other day, and I want to share that with you because I think that sheds some light on how we need to do what we need to do. And it goes like this. It says, the fool speaks loudly about that which he or she doesn't know, while the wise sits silently at the feet of the elders.
Wow.
You see, we have to learn that sometimes we have to know when to speak up and when to be quiet. We have to know that even though I'm almost 50, that I know that there's elders who know things that I don't know. And so, therefore, I need to be – I don't have to agree with everything that they say, but I at least need to, one, give them the respect and courtesy of listening. Two, know that pausing and silence is as important as speaking, right? Because I was just taking a hike the other day, and being in the woods, you learn from the trees. You learn from the birds. You learn from the animals walking around because of that silence helps you to understand the world around you. You learn about the wind. You learn about the rain. All those things are important. They have important lessons for us to learn. And if we are wise enough, we will be able to know when to be silent and to sit down and pause, be meditative, and reflective on that meditation so that we then can use it to employ when we need to. We need a toolbox. And this is the last thing I said in my book, The Hidden Debate, is that we need a toolbox because those enemies of African success have tools and toolboxes. We haven't studied their toolboxes well enough. We don't know all their tools, and we don't have enough tools, and some of us don't have toolboxes. It's like if you are tasked with taking the light switch off the wall and you have a Phillips screwdriver, but the screw that's in there is a flathead, you're going to have a hard row to flow. But if you get a flathead screwdriver, it'll be easy to take off. And then there's tools, and then there's better tools. So if you did that same thing with a power screwdriver or a drill, you would do that job twice as fast and maybe so more efficient and better. So what are our intellectual tools? That's what the tools that we get from Dr. John Henry Clark, from Amos Wilson, the Blueprint for Black Power. Whew, man, mammoth. The works Baba Carruthers, Jake Carruthers, talking about the knowing of the medu nefer, right? Good speech, what that means. It's not about just talking well, with a good accent or something. No, it's about knowing the character of your speech, knowing that words have power and that you want to speak words of power, knowing the message behind the Secret, right? And so that even those things, right, the bottom line is like words of affirmation. You speak things into being. You speak your success into being. I am Dr. Akil Kokiyi Kalfani today because I had that on my wall every day while I was in grad school, and that's where I knew I was headed. I knew I had to write a dissertation, so I had the first thing that I had up on the wall was write first. Got to write. If you can't write, you can't do a dissertation. You're not going to be a Dr. Kalfani. So those are the things. We have to have those types of visions about where we're headed and how we get there, and we have to stick to it. I see a lot of kids today, young folks, young men, young women, they come slouching into places, leaning down. They can't sit up straight in the seat for 10 minutes. They don't have backbone, spiritual backbone. They don't have a type of constitution that helps them to be successful. And so it's not about sitting down, putting on a suit and tie, but that you have to have pride in who you are and where you came from. And if they knew the truth about where they came from, about whom from they came, then they would have a different mentality. Then they would have a different way of doing and thinking. They would have a sense of pride because they would know that they are spiritual and sacred beings that are blessed to be here, and that we could only survive to be here today as African people, knowing the things that we've been through, the tortures that we've been through, right? If anybody knows anything about torture, it's African people. We've been through torture and torment, and we continue to go through it daily, because really that's all this was, this thing that this guy did, was an idea about torture. He said, y'all get in your place. You black folks, you Negro people, get in your place because we don't like you, and here's the outcome of what can come of our hatred. But really, it's not about hatred. It's about control and domination. See, we get caught up on the wrong things. Even that flag thing, I think it's important that it comes down, and I'm glad that it is, but let's not get distracted. What are we doing to uplift those families? Are we more concerned about the flag than we are uplifting the families? What are we doing about preparation? Are we more concerned about the flag than we are about preparing about the other terrorists in our midst? We got the wrong agenda. We let someone sidetrack us from really where we should be. So we can have a few people on that, but that's not all of us get caught up in something that is really on one level trivial but important, but not the main thing. Because there's other stuff going on behind the scenes that we're not preparing for, that we're not seeing, that we're not dealing with. And those are the things that are even more important. Those are the things that have a much more long-lasting impact on us as Africans and potentially detrimental impact on us.
Well, you know, it's interesting that you make that comment about getting sidetracked with something like the flag. And you're seeing corporations who are supposedly getting on that bandwagon, and it makes you wonder, okay, I don't think they're making their bottom line by selling flags, so is it really that they're just trying to support the idea that the flag is just racist, or again, is it something that could be sidetracked? You have to look at those. A Walmart, I'm even hearing maybe Mercedes-Benz. How about taking that same effort and making a campaign to commit to employ more blacks in your corporations? So I think I agree with what you're saying about that sidetrack piece, Dr. Kofani. That was profound. We have another hand up. Those who are listening, the number is 347-838-9142. We're talking with Dr. Akhil Kofani, a professor, sociologist, director of the Africana Institute of Essex County College. And we're talking about the state of African Americans and what we need to do to come together collectively to make a difference. I'm going to come back after I turn the airways over to our next call-in, who Cecil, our engineer, has a comment. And I want to ask after he's done what you think about us having certain internal distractions, being our own worst enemy, having those who have, quote, sold out, the Uncle Toms of the world. I want to come back and discuss how we might begin to address those things. But first, Cecil, you have the airway. Cecil, our engineer, what did you have to say, Cecil?
Well, I'll make it brief. I've noticed here in our modern society at large, on an international scope, on an international scale, there are these all kinds of wars on terrorism, right? And they're going after ISIS. They're going after the Taliban and so on and so on. But the Ku Klux Klan is also a terrorist organization, yet they are allowed to still exist in the United States of America. So I was just wondering to the doctor, does that seem like, what does that seem like to you?
They don't terrorize European people. So if they were terrorizing
right.
Europeans, then it'd be an issue, right? So that's that in a nutshell,
okay.
that these issues don't become an issue until it affects European people, people of European descent. Now, you know, I mean, people are probably listening saying, well, who do I mean by European people? And by that I mean people who call themselves white in America. The idea of whiteness, though, to me, I go back to Frantz Fanon, whiteness and blackness, that even that's a distraction for us because Fanon says that whiteness only exists as a contradistinction to blackness and that blackness exists as a contradistinction to whiteness. That is that whiteness, so even having the discussion about blackness and whiteness is that whiteness and blackness were creations and that the creation of the two were to create one as a superordinate and one as a subordinate. And so the subordinate is the African and the superordinate is the European and so that or the white. And so that, you know, people didn't come here to America as white. They came here as Irish and British and Spanish and Welsh and all these different European groups. Yugoslavian, all these small groups that which they came here. And Africans didn't come here as Africans. We came here as Wolof, as Mende, as Akan. And so this creation of black and white
Bambara.
Was this idea of creating this other. And the other was less than the superordinate group. And so that's how we get to this space. And we don't see that because we allow other people to control the dialogue.
Or to define who we are.
We right. have to define
another. Yeah. And another.
Let me just say one thing
point.
Also that you know that my I'm not here. You know, you mentioned the Africana Institute, Essex County College. I'm here representing Akil Kokiyi Kalfani, not necessarily Essex County College. So those that's the basis of my remarks today.
I appreciate that. You do so much. I wouldn't want to leave out the substantial body of work. My question coming back, and we have enough for maybe one other caller tonight. And so the number is 347-838-9142. If we don't get to you, we will continue this dialogue. And I do want to focus getting into the solution piece. You'll dial 1 once you call that number if you're listening in from the computers. So with that said, we've always, as a people, and we've had this discussion, Dr. Kofani, been in some cases our own worst enemy, going back to the motherland. In many cases, there were Africans who sold other Africans. And right here and now, we still have that Willie Lynch syndrome where we have in our communities. I experienced a situation even this week, a local leader who was bent on trying to disparage my name for no good reason. And that's just an example. So what about those scenarios? Then, of course, on a broader scale, you have those who have broad media attention that those who are in power obviously insist on putting on the forefront. You don't see our jazz artists getting the airtime as you do our hip-hop rappers, not to try to vilify them, but the message that they're bringing in this day and time generally is not one of as much substance. So what is your thought, and we're going to kind of wrap up on this and pick up the next time in terms of what we need to do and how we're going to do it. But what's your thought on that aspect of this movement, as Dr. Porter affectionately mentioned earlier, in terms of organized effort?
Yeah, I mean, I think that a couple of things real quick, and that is that definitely we have people who are in the process of engaging us and creating conflict or there's tension, but you know that you, in all communities you have greed, in all communities you have people who are self-interested or self-centered, And so we can't let those self-centered, self-interested folks outweigh the momentum of the collective. And so if we go back to our ideas of communalism, of working together for the collective, I think we can succeed beyond those. You know, but we also have to remember that we have people and systems, you know, and Dr. Jeffrey, Leonard Jeffries always talk about we have a systems analysis, and that is that we have systems of that are working against us, not individuals, and we have to have systems working for us. So the same way that there may be a system working against us, we have to have our own systems working for our benefit. And when we do it that way, we have the ability to approach things from a different level. And so, you know, some of those systems, things that I'm working with other people on, such as Larry Ham and other folks, is that we're working on ways to address these negative realities. And so one of the things is that we are currently working on this whole project for it's going to be in when is it? It's going to be July the 25th, and that's going to be the people's the Million People's March. And so then that's going to be something I think that's going to provide a space for us to really begin to transform what's been going on, at least the opportunity to address the conflicting nature of stuff, and then to think about how we can restructure things and make a statement about it. You know, if we continue to only approach things in a way that is honoring the negative energy, and I think that sometimes is what happens when we give people like this guy Root the benefit of the doubt, or not maybe that's the wrong word, not the benefit of the doubt, but when we give him a way out, he needs to have no way out. He is in the middle of this whole thing, and so therefore he needs to be held accountable the entire way through the process, and the only people to hold him accountable is us, and we have to make sure that we do that and realize that it's our responsibility to do so. And when you look at the organizing piece, I think that I'll go back to Kwame Ture's point, and that is that, you know, he was a member of several organizations, SNCC, but after that, the All African People's Revolutionary Party, and maybe other organizations outside of that. And the thing is that his point was always, I don't care if you don't have to join my organization, but join an organization, because organizations, being in an organization, is the fundamental piece about the how you're going to bring about change. Martin Luther King Jr., he would say, wasn't successful because he had a great speech and a great idea. Martin Luther King Jr. was successful, he would say, because he surrounded himself with thousands of people who agreed with the ideas and sentiment of what he was doing, and therefore he was able to make transformation in the society. Even though it was at the cost of his life, that there were certain things that we are not doing today because of the struggles that he and other organizations did back then. We don't sit on the back of any buses anymore by force. There's no water fountains except for maybe something that's an artifact that says that Negroes only and whites, or coloreds only and whites. Those things don't exist. So those struggles, even though not everybody agreed with the approach, that those struggles are the things that help to bring about the change for us as a people today. And so we have to thank all those different organizations, CORE, SNCC, SCLC, the Nation of Islam, the Organization of African American Unity, the Garvey Movement. Right, all these entities collectively are the things that brought about change in American society for Africans, and not only just Africans, but really people don't realize this, particularly many Europeans, is that they themselves are the beneficiaries of many of the things that Africans fought for. So the ability for the largest beneficiaries, and this is not my statistic, this is coming from a previous White House report, that the largest beneficiaries of affirmative action are white women or European-American women. And so they fight against something that they are the primary beneficiaries of. So it's ironic, all right, that they are the primary beneficiaries of, the largest beneficiaries of, but they decry its existence. They decry the maintenance of it. Even the idea about welfare, the largest beneficiaries of welfare are Europeans because they're the majority of the population. And then beyond that, even that's a cover-up for the multinationals who get crazy benefits, and I'll call them welfare, right? The bailout, the trillion-dollar bailout of the banks and the auto industry, that was welfare because it was our money. And so they basically transferred or stole all that money from the people and gave it to the corporations. It was corporate welfare. But we don't. But they'll tell you that we live in a free market economy. That's because we don't read. We are like sheep, following people who say that they want great things for everybody. But that's not always the case. And so we have to. You know, I'm not saying that. Now there's a bunch of Europeans who work hard and tirelessly to bring about change. There's a bunch of Asians. There's a bunch of Latinos. And so there's different people, Muslims and Jews and Christians and Buddhists. Who all work positively and constructively to bring about change. So it's not a critique on any one individual or any one group, but it's about that we have to have, like Dr. Jeffrey said, a systems analysis, and we have to have a systematic approach to the solutions. And those are the fundamental keys.
Well, you know, on that note, when you start talking about a systematic solution, I want to pick up on that. We had brother Dr. Kevin Porter join us and weigh in on support of what you're talking about. Of course, I intend to participate with the Million People's March. It's going to be efforts like that. I'd like to use this forum as much as possible to galvanize. I think that we want to, taking on the coattail of what you're saying, take these local efforts. Much as we did in the past, and I heard you mention that we've got to look at the tools and the toolboxes of our history, of our elders, and we may not have to go back too far. We do need to go back to the walls of the pyramids, which say know thyself, and we also want to be cognizant of the brothers and sisters that in not too distant in recent history, in the 60s, did some things. And what we saw then is we had collective efforts across the country. And so I'd like to see us work towards those types of efforts. And we do have cells, if I don't like to use that term, but we do have groups of individuals like the Brother in Texas and Baltimore and Ohio, and I can go on, that are ready to collectively bond together to make a difference towards some of those things that you're talking about. So that will be the effort that I want to see us go forward to, and the next time that we come together, Dr. Kalfani, I'd like to see us have some type of a model, the basic model that we can talk about in terms of efforts that we can duplicate. We may do this in different forms, like you said, various organizations. I know Brother Porter talks about using some of our fraternities, which are in place, which have already in place mission statements that too significantly are not being implemented for the upliftment of African-American people. So I would just ask, with all of that said, that you continue to work alongside, allow me to work alongside with you to bring about a collective, concerted, strategic effort to make a difference.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. And I want to close on this. I think that one of the solutions for us as African people is for everybody to go home. Once you touch that African soil and you've been through those dungeons, you've been to the places where the spirit is uplifted for us as Africans, you know, that you experience both the pain and the joy, then I think that we come back here renewed. We come back here re-envisioned. But we got to, I think that in our lifetimes, that everybody, African person in the diaspora, whether you're in the United States, Guyana, Jamaica, Haiti, that all of us, Canada, as people of African descent, and there's a rich African history in Canada that most of us don't know about, that we've got to head home to the continent and make that sojourn so that we can come back from that type of a pilgrimage and be uplifted and be renewed in our spirit and our energy to transform the spaces and the places that we live.
Wow, that's wonderful. That is wonderful, and it ties in what you were saying about the history, because everybody can't afford those $1,000, and they need to be putting that little money away for themselves and their loved ones, and I agree 100%. But in the meantime, wouldn't you agree, maybe you want to visit one of your African-American history museums. Maybe you want
to just
touch it, touch your foot on that. If you can't say, make that trip, and don't just say you can't, because like you said, we need to also learn some of these secrets, and I'm not talking about the book, because there are secrets that go all the way back to the motherland, talking about energy and the use of the moon and the sun and the stars, and this is no witchcraft, but we need to understand who we are and the power that we have.
Oh, I agree. There's a whole bunch of, you know, one show that might be interesting for you is at one point is to have some traditional African spiritualists to come on and talk about traditional African spirituality. I think that'd be a fabulous discussion. And then, you know, everybody in the Northeast who's listening, there should be no African people in the Northeast who haven't been to the African burial ground in New York City. It's free, and it is powerful. You know, it's right down next to City Hall. And so if you're here, there's no reason why you can't go. If we can go to the movies, we can go to the African burial ground. If we can go to see a play, we can go to the African burial ground. And the other place would be, you know, the Blacks and Wax Museum in Maryland. You know, those places are powerful, uplifting, maybe a tidbit depressing, but that depressingness is something that helps to uplift us once we understand our connection to that.
Wow, that's powerful. I want to thank Dr. Akil Fofani, a true change agent, author, sociologist, and one who walks the talk and talks talk, but more importantly, really walks the talk. Dr. Kofani, I'll be on board with you. We're going to make that happen in terms of the spiritualist. So we'll be in touch within the next few days to make that happen. And then I also want to strategize with you and some other brothers and sisters that I've talked to about what you and I have been talking about. Like I said, there's quite a few. Dr. Porter, who joined in, Dr. Joy DeGruy, there's quite a few that I've spoken with about this, and they're all interested. Larry Hamm is another one. So, yeah, we're not going to let up, not this time. We're going to up the ante. That's where we are right now. And I thank you so much. I thank all the listeners who called in, and I ask that you, for your deliverable, do something progressive with regard to your African-American history. If you're on the East Coast, go to the African Burial Ground. There isn't a major Mecca in this country, whether you're in my hometown, Cleveland, or you're in St. Louis, or you're in Texas, or in many of the central spots there, or Alabama, or Kentucky, New York, Georgia, Florida. I go. I don't want to leave people out. California, because these are all the spots we got listeners in. Michigan, and of course, Missouri, where our engineer is. There isn't a city, metro, a lot that's kicking that doesn't have some cultural aspect there. Let's make this weekend a cultural, if we don't do anything but speak to our youth and loved ones about who we are. And then we're going to make that commitment that next week we're going to be bringing it back live and strong to pick up on this. Thank you again for tuning in. We'll close out with a little tune of Keeping Your Head Up. Keep the faith, everybody. We're going to win this. Blessings. Namaste.